Lunch Talk Live, this is a good way to start it, right? How about Drew Brees playing like Michael Jordan and LeBron James? Let's not even call out that the Hops needed some help. Drew's kids were doing that, figured he'd do that, and we figured we'd start you with a good laugh and a reason to smile. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Lunch Talk Live, known on the West Coast as Brunch Talk Live. Mike Tirico back with you for day two. At least we made it for the start of the show from a technology standpoint, so we're off to a better start in this one. The list is loaded for our Lunch Talk conversation. And again, for those of you who joined us for the first time, if you weren't with us yesterday, this is just an hour respite to talk sports. And we're going to talk about the Premier League. Rebecca Lowe and Catherine Tappan are both going to join us to talk about their respective sports. But what about Liverpool? Had a magical season. And how's it going to end? We're not sure. Denny Hamlin won the Daytona 500 when racing was going on earlier in the year. The three-time Daytona 500 champ will talk Racing Week in America and iRacing with us. And mentioned Catherine's going to join us to talk National Hockey League. The commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, who should be getting ready to start the playoffs tomorrow instead, will be joining us. All that ahead, but the conversation will begin with Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Want to cover the news as we get these hours going every day. And Mike, there is several bits of news from the NFL. As always, things seem to have gone on almost as scheduled. Let me start with this concept of a virtual draft. What was your read and what was the reaction from people around the league, Mike, when they got the memo from Roger Goodell, the commissioner, yesterday that this is going to be like your fantasy league? You're going to be drafting from your couch when it counts for real here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, Mike, I don't think anyone was surprised by this. I think the league may have gotten a little over its skis last week when suggesting that it would allow war rooms of up to 10 people. And then that got compared to the stay-at-home orders in now all of the states where the NFL does business. There's no way to reconcile that when everyone is expected to stay at home except for essential reasons. And the NFL did the right thing, recognizing that the best way to do this, the only way to do this, is to have everyone stay at home. It sends the right message to the rest of the public that is subject to stay-at-home orders. We're all expected to do our jobs at home if we can, and there is a way to do this. The NFL can figure this out. The teams can figure it out. They're all on equal footing, and they're all going to be expected to make their picks within the appropriate window, regardless of what difficulties they may encounter. Everyone has the same set of rules.
You're the best at using your league experience and your lawyer experience to find the potholes on the road ahead. What's the biggest concern you're hearing or you're seeing to this happening here in 3 weeks virtually?
Well, I just think the reality of threading the needle on every single pick, getting everything done that you ordinarily would do. Is there a possibility for a trade? Is there some last-minute consideration you'd like to make as a guy falls down the board that you didn't think was going to be there? And I think it's going to be critical, Mike, for every team to have one person who is essentially the virtual conductor, who knows who to go to, who to say, I need you to do this, I need you to do that, and when to convene a very small discussion of the people who ultimately influence that final decision as to what the pick is going to be. But I just think it's critical to have one person who is going to be in charge of all of this. It's not going to be easy. They should be rehearsing it, practicing it, thinking about every issue that could come up. But I just think, Mike, you know, being out of their usual environment and doing this in a fundamentally different way, it's going to take some thought, some foresight, and some practice.
The MVP might be the IT guy for each team. Mike, I want to go back a little bit here. As the draft process goes on, we know teams fly guys in, ask them 100 different questions. They really want to have their secret workout with the one surprise guy they're trying to hide in all the mock drafts and all that other stuff. How do you think the entirety of the selection process will be impacted by the limited contact agents, coaches, players, GMs have all had in these couple of months since the combine?
You know, the teams have been allowed to contact an unlimited number of prospects up to three times per week each for an hour per conversation. Now, whether to what extent you take full advantage of that, you know, there's only so many hours in the day. But they are able to talk to them, but they can't see them face-to-face. They can't get the kind of medical information they otherwise would have post-combine, and they can't do those private workouts. And those private workouts are occasions where teams can fall in love with a guy, and we don't know about it, and they wouldn't know about it without the private workout. Right. So, Mike, the draft is always a crapshoot. This makes it even more of a crapshoot than it usually is. And we're going to see some guys who are going to slide because they didn't have an opportunity to prove themselves through private workouts, through the ability to have their health conditions checked out properly. and teams are going to be taking risks. And there's going to be some teams, they're going to realize, hey, you know what? That guy who fell into our lap in round 3, 4, or 5, that guy would have been a first rounder, and he's going to be a key part of our team for years to come.
Now let's talk about how the calendar is truly being impacted, because to this point, the NFL has pretty much been on to schedule. Now we'd have off-season team activities, the OTAs. Those are not happening for the teams that have new head coaches, which could have started this week. But there was even more a sense I got from reading Pro Football Talk and hearing some other comments from folks that we're really going to start to get to the point now that this calendar of preparing for the season will truly be impacted for these teams around the league starting in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Mike. I was looking at the memo that the commissioner sent to all teams yesterday explaining that the draft will happen with everyone at home. And you don't have to read very closely between the lines to realize this status the NFL is currently in with all facilities closed, it's going to last into June. The question is how far into June. Is there a way to have some sort of a short 3-day orientation session, mini camp type thing for all teams when we get to mid-June, because that's really when the off-season programs would be ending. When can they get back to a point where people can go to the facility? And the one thing to remember, the NFL is only going to allow all teams to do something if all teams can do it. It can't be some, it can't be most, it can't be a few. They have to all be able to go to the facility. They have to all be able to have practice. They have to all be on equal footing. That's another thing that came through clearly in the memo from Roger Goodell yesterday. So that just means that it's going to be longer, not shorter, before all teams are able to do anything by way of getting ready for the season.
And I don't want to get too deep into this, but for example, Governor Cuomo in New York, who has been lauded widely as being so excellent in this space, he has to make decisions on a statewide level. So what's happening in the 5 boroughs of New York and Nassau and Suffolk County on Long Island and Westchester, just north of the 5 boroughs, might be different from what's happening in Erie County, where the Buffalo Bills are. But if it's a statewide order, then the Bills' schedule is going to be different because of what's happening in the New York metropolitan area. I know I'm laying several what-ifs on the line here, but those are just some of the conversations that I read that memo the same way you did. The 32 teams will be equal. And if it's going on in New York, even though it might be clear somewhere else, they're still going to be impacted. Mike, we'll see you every morning on Pro Football Talk. It has been a constant through all of this, 7 a.m. Eastern time, repeated right after that. Thanks for coming on with us here on Lunch Talk. Appreciate it, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Anytime.
All right, breakfast with Florio, lunch with us, and we're going to switch gears and talk baseball a little bit because that's the next conversation to have. While NFL stadiums and seeing fans in the stands are one of the things we're looking forward to going forward, there's also the reality of what's going to happen with Major League Baseball. I'm going to bring in Craig Calcaterra, who joins us now from Hardball Talk. He covers baseball and MLB for NBC Sports. Craig, this is an interesting conversation because stuff started getting out last night that Major League Baseball, among the many things they're looking at, could be looking at having everyone play their games in Arizona. Now, MLB put out a statement this morning. We'll get to that in a second. But what are the headlines that jump out to you on this topic of conversation?
Well, you said to Mike that there are no such things as bad ideas. Well, hey, these are ideas. We'll give them that. The general idea is a mass quarantine. I'm going to call it the Arizona Bubble League. They talked about bringing all players from all 30 major league teams to Arizona, putting them up in hotels, quarantining them, testing them to make sure everybody's okay, and then playing some sort of abbreviated season in one of the 10 or 15 spring training facilities, and then Chase Field, where the Arizona Diamondbacks play. They're talking about maybe 7-inning doubleheaders to get in as many games as they can. Not having fans, but having the players sit in the stands rather than in the dugout so they can have 6 feet apart from one another. No mound visits, electronic umpires calling balls and strikes so you don't have maybe a 50, 60-year-old umpire standing behind a catcher in so close proximity. It was a lot of ideas thrown against the wall. And let's be honest here, this is preliminary. You have to throw a lot of ideas against the wall.
MLB came out with a statement within the last hour, so we'll put that up and share some of it with you because they were hearing this conversation as well once it got out in public, and their statement pretty much acknowledged the fact that they are considering a wide range of topics in this Arizona because of the spring training that happens, the facilities that are there, actively considering these many contingency plans along the way, but have not settled on that option or developed a detailed plan with health and safety and obviously the health situation being of highest priority. Certainly, if you want to read through that, you can find it online or on social media. What do you think the biggest drawbacks or roadblocks would be to potentially pulling this off, Craig?
Well, as soon as I heard these ideas when I woke up this morning, I thought of about a dozen or two. I won't go through all of them, but I think the biggest issue, first of all, is quarantining players up to 4.5, 5 months. Let's assume for a moment you could even do an effective quarantine. That's a whole another medical issue that I don't think I'm qualified to talk about. But if you could even do that, do they just not see their families for 4 or 5 months? How does that affect them? What if a wife has a baby back home? What if a parent gets sick, heaven forbid? What do you do about that? If someone falls ill in camp, do they just leave? Is their season over? You have to expand rosters. Then you got to think about when you have 750 or 1,000 major league players in close proximity, they need people to cook for them. They need people to clean up their hotel rooms, to launder jerseys and things. It's a huge, huge ecosystem of people to put on 15 major league baseball games a night in normal circumstances. What would you do in this very compact circumstance? I think that just as a virus grows exponentially, so do the number of people and the number of complications you have when you try to put on professional sports. And I just don't think that if you look that far down the line of how things have to go, that a May timeline is realistic. Hey, maybe we could do this in June, like Mike said. Maybe we could do this in July. But I think this compacted timeline that came out in the report overnight is a bit unrealistic.
Well, good to get the perspective from you and what you've heard from folks around the league. Hardball Talk, you follow at NBCSports.com. Craig Calcaterra, significant contributor to that. We'll stay in touch. Craig, thank you. We appreciate it. As
Thank
we
you,
continue to talk baseball before we get to the rest of our guests here today, just a word on a personal note. We are all hearing of loss and tragedies and people who have left us. You might catch this picture if you are really aware. You'll see the old English D. It's the Detroit Tigers in the World Series. And living in Michigan, one of the people I've gotten to know over the last two decades was Al Kaline. Al Kaline, Baseball Hall of Famer, 3,000 hit club. Most games played in Tigers history, most home runs in Tigers history, passed away yesterday, age 85. Al Kaline's stats and platitudes you see at the bottom of the screen. What you don't see in his stats or when you look him up on baseballreference.com is what kind of person he was. Every time you went to the ballpark, every time you went to a charity event, a summertime golf event that Al Kaline was there, he was warm, he was gracious, he shared a story and a smile. His nickname was Mr. Tiger. Every franchise has a guy like that. Think of Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub. Al Kaline was Mr. Tiger, and he's one of the special people for one of the special organizations in the history of the sport, and couldn't let this hour go by without thinking of the Tigers family, his family, and the many friends, not just in Michigan, but around the country, especially the Baltimore area where he grew up, who are remembering fondly Al Kaline on this day. We will continue with much more, and we're going to have some fun, too. Every day, we're going to bring together some of our NBC teammates. Catherine Tappan and Rebecca Lowe join us next. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman's around the corner. A little bit later on, Denny Hamlin. But KT and Bex are coming up. We come back on Lunch Talk Live.
Your pictures of what you like to have for breakfast on a Saturday morning while watching the Premier League, because if you know anything about the two Robbies, Carl and myself, you'll know that breakfast in the studio on a Saturday or Sunday is really very important to us. We have a lot of debates about it. We do quite a lot of breakfast shaming. Biscuits with butter and honey and a cup of tea. Okay, tea, obviously. Tea, yes. Biscuits. Now, this is where I get a bit confused, because biscuits in the UK is like a chocolate chip cookie. So you say, oh, can I get a biscuit? And somebody gives you something sweet to have with your tea. Breakfast tacos with scrambled eggs, bacon, cheese, and guac. I mean, that's lovely. And we know that our great friend, JJ Watt, does love to watch the Premier League eating breakfast tacos. And I know this is just a British thing, but I mean, that just looks like lunch. It just looks like lunch.
This is lunch. It's Lunch Talk Live here on NBCSN and breakfast with Bex in person from the West Coast, where it is still breakfast time. Rebecca Lowe, host of our Premier League coverage on NBC, and of course, Catherine Tappan, host of our NHL coverage and Notre Dame sidelines and a whole bunch of other stuff. They both join us together. So, Catherine, when we go in for Football Night in America on Sundays and the Premier League folks are still there, their breakfast is not our breakfast. So, Rebecca, this breakfast thing, hopefully the American influence has made it a little bit better.
Mike, it's an education. I'm educating, I think, America. And America, more importantly, is educating me about what I should be feeding my kid now that we are living in America.
You've been doing a lot of that on social media. Catherine, I know you and the NHL crew have been on social media a lot, just interacting with players and fans, just trying to fill this void here along the way. What's been the takeaway of that so far for you?
The takeaway is that guys are learning how difficult it is to be at home with their children 24/7. No, we had a great opportunity last week to catch up with some of the players, some of the brothers in the NHL, which was really fun to see. Jack and Quinn Hughes, who are in this isolation together back home in Michigan. You'll see that tonight at 6:30. But I think the overriding message that's been conveyed by the players is just how important it is to stay home. I mean, these are guys that their training has taken a huge step back. You know, they're not on the ice. They haven't laced up skates in weeks. They're using what they have in their basement or any kind of equipment they have to get workouts in. But they're doing everything that we're supposed to all be doing collectively right now, and that's stay at home and be safe. And they're all abiding by that. And they're all, of course, incredibly positive and mentally strong. So that's been really it's been very encouraging talking to them in that regard.
Yeah, we'll talk to Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, here at the bottom of the hour about that stuff a little bit. But you mentioned the social media, and a lot of us have been trying to just stay more entertained by Instagram or things like that. Rebecca, your Instagram feed has been hysterical. Your daily updates of how you're holding up with your three-year-old there at home has been it's been downright priceless. How are we doing this week? Let's check in early on this week.
Well, first of all, I have no idea what day it is, Mike, because I'm sure most people agree. I don't know what week it is. I barely really know what month it is. We're okay. We're holding up. I've got him in front of the Incredibles next door. My husband's on a conference call. So it's one of those situations where you're kind of like, Teddy, watch the Incredibles. You can watch it for as long as you want. Mummy has to do a work call. And it's a strange one, Mike, because I don't get me wrong, of course, I adore spending all this time with my family. It is absolutely heaven. And of course, it's no hardship compared to what so many other people out there are having to do. And so many people, of course, who can't be with their family. On the flip side, having a nearly four-year-old, he turns four in a couple of weeks, trying to explain why everything is closed and why he can't see any friends and why his birthday party's right. been cancelled and why the Easter Bunny is only going to visit him and none of his friends aren't going to come and do the Easter egg hunt that we had planned and obviously I'd been talking about forever. Trying to have those conversations with a three-year-old is one of the hardest things about the situation, just from our perspective in this house. It's not hard generally, of course. He will be fine. There is no hardship here, but it's certainly a challenge. And I get to the end of every day and we put him to bed and my husband and I, we crack open a bottle of wine. We take a breath. I've got to be honest. We take a breath, Mike.
You're not alone. Trust me on that. Hey, I'm going to ask you about your sports here in a second, but I want to get one serious part here. Catherine, you're in New York City and there are some sounds in New York every night that you've shared with us. We did a Zoom call, the three of us and Liam McHugh last week, and you shared with us at 7 o'clock the sounds of New York City, and then through the night, the sirens that you hear. What's it like being right in what has truly become the epicenter of this COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, Mike, I would say it's a loud silence here in New York. The biggest sounds we hear all day are the sirens and the helicopters overhead. But that 7 o'clock every single night, you know, I'm in my house and I can hear it and I get out there and I cheer and I clap for them as well. And you get overwhelmed because it's the best of New York and we're in the worst of New York right now. So as excited as I am to cheer for them and to clap and to see all my neighbors joining in on it and all of our colleagues that live in New York City are experiencing it in their neighborhoods as well. But then you recognize why you're doing it and your heart just breaks for the frontline people, the doctors, the nurses, the first responders. It's been hard to listen to every night, to be honest. You get excited when you hear it, and then your heart kind of skips a beat as well. So, but honestly, being in New York, you know, right now, it's as hard as it is, it's inspiring as well because the people are strong and getting through it together. And I take a lot of solace in my runs in Central Park. And in the beginning, you know, there's nature all around us. But now there's a field hospital just outside of Mount Sinai. So you stop during your run and you just look and you say a prayer and you continue on. And it's everywhere. It's everywhere. So being positive is a choice right now in New York. It doesn't come naturally, but you've got to wake up every day and really dig in and find that positivity.
It's great perspective that you shared with all of us. I'm glad you could share it with everyone watching. All right, let's talk about your sports. I'm thinking of a couple of teams here. Liverpool and the Bruins, let's pick, for example, teams that were really rolling, teams that looked like, especially Liverpool's case, Rebecca, looked like they had it all going, and then this comes to an end. Just perspective, first Rebecca, then you, Catherine, on these two teams that had championship dreams and aspirations and now are just sitting in this unknown abyss here for who knows how long.
Well, Mike, when you talk about dreams, Liverpool have been dreaming for 30 years. And in fact, just a few days before this really came to the forefront of everyone's lives, we were still having conference calls about all the content that we were creating about the 30-year wait. Not since 1990 had Liverpool, one of the biggest clubs in the world, won the top division title. And they've never won the Premier League because it changed its name to the Premier League in the early 90s. The city of Liverpool, which is, if you've never been or you don't know much about it, it's probably similar actually to Boston. It's a major, major sports city. It's quite, it's almost like a little island by itself. It's an incredibly tight-knit community. And this community has been waiting, as I say, three decades, an entire generation for this moment. They were 25, or they are, 25 points clear. Unheard of. Never before have we seen a team that far ahead at any stage of the season, let alone right now, three quarters of the way through. Whether or not the league resumes, of course, is a question we don't know the answer to. But most people, I think I talk for most Premier League fans, is we desperately want this season at some point not to be just declared null and void, not to just be declared, OK, you win the title because you were 25 points clear. They don't want that. Nobody wants to win the title just to be given it 25 points clear and 28, 29 games into a season. So hopefully for Liverpool fans' sake, this season can be completed. Now, it might have to be completed inside empty stadiums. They might have to lift the trophy inside Anfield with not a single fan there. But if that's what it takes for the history to be completed, for the season to be completed, then I think the Liverpool fans would take that. It is a very difficult position to be in as a Liverpool fan. Of course, there's many, many more important things in life right now. But let me just tell you, football, probably like, I know, like sport in this country, football in the UK is in the blood. It is in the veins. And for those Liverpool fans who have waited this amount of time, some people their whole lives, it's a horrible situation to be in, to now not know when or if you are going to be able to see your team lift that title you've waited so long for.
Catherine, you go ahead on the NHL situation. The Bruins, 6-8 points clear of St. Louis and everyone else in the NHL at this point. And there's a team that, like everyone else in hockey, has just put their hopes and dreams on hold.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, unlike Liverpool, Boston fans are spoiled. Championships happen all the time up there in that city. But the Boston Bruins went all the way to Game 7 last year, the Stanley Cup Final, against the St. Louis Blues. And those two teams are neck and neck right now. I mean, we've been watching this throughout the course of the season, how we could very likely have a Stanley Cup Final repeat, as we saw last year with the Blues and the Bruins. I had the opportunity to talk to Tuukka Rask last week, and actually last night spoke to Ryan O'Reilly. Both players will be involved in our coverage this week for Hockey Week. But, you know, Tuukka Rask had a great perspective. He's just not even focused on what was for the season, but what is happening right now and keeping his family safe. I mean, Tuukka's having his third daughter in about 2 weeks, so he's more concerned about how he's going to take care of his two daughters at home while his wife goes to the hospital and when he'll be able to see her during the child labor. Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, I asked him what the difference was with his team last year and this year, and he said the difference this year is that they weren't the last team in the NHL in January, so they started off much better. But he also had the same perspective. I mean, it's more about just being safe right now and taking care of measures at home and making sure our country gets out of this pandemic. But both players, I will say, they didn't really give me any perspective on what they want the season to look like going forward. And there's so many scenarios, as there are in baseball and there are in football, but neither one of them was ready to test the waters and share their opinion about what they want or what they expect. I think everyone's just status quo right now and really focusing on just staying safe.
And let me turn that to Rebecca. Obviously, the situation in the UK has changed significantly in the last 24 hours as Prime Minister Boris Johnson was taken not just to the hospital, but in intensive care. We found out about 22 hours ago on the report this morning from number 10 Downing Street. was that he remains in stable condition at this point. But that certainly got the attention of so many around the world, as one of the world leaders, one of the high power world leaders, was affected very personally by this. Rebecca, the conversation is there for the moment. What has the conversation been like in the UK about restarting the season, finishing, as you mentioned, and also the relegation and promotion, because that is just as big a part of the Premier League as who wins the trophy at the end?
It is, Mike. You're absolutely right. And let's not forget, the whole reason we have relegation is that three teams from the division below can get promoted and take those teams' places. And that actually trickles down to five divisions, five professional leagues of soccer in the UK. So it's not just about the Premier League. It's about the whole pyramid of English soccer. The conversations are, as you can imagine, dynamic. There are some on one side of the fence who truly believe that there is nothing important now about the Premier League and it should be null and void. We should forget that 2019-2020 season ever existed, move on and try and start 2020-2021 in August when it was supposed to. However, of course, there are a lot of people, Liverpool fans included, Liverpool as a club, but also many other teams throughout that pyramid I just mentioned are all saying, no, we cannot just null and void three quarters of a season with the sweat, blood and tears that had gone into getting these teams where they are. We can finish the season. I think that the Premier League and the FA and the PFA, which is the Players Union, are doing everything they can to try to see out the season. Now, there are so many problems with this because we have a transfer window in the summer. So do you have a transfer window active while the maybe games are going on in July, if July even becomes a situation? Mike, you know, thank goodness I'm not around this table, because the amount of questions, and we haven't got time on this show for me to tell you all the different ramifications of what could happen and what might happen if the season does go ahead or doesn't go ahead and does finish, legal ramifications apart from anything else. I think the problem is there's a lack of timeline. Nobody knows. No one knows when this can finish. And therefore, the Premier League cannot be specific about what they are going to do. They can only be specific about what they want to do. And that is, they do want to resume this season. It's just nobody knows when. And if the later it gets, Mike, if it starts pushing towards the end of the summer, the new season starts August 8th, then what happens to the new season? So, like I said, so many questions, but lots of debate going on, lots of conversation over there in the UK for sure.
Yeah, our Premier League fans are hearing that. You have your social media gatherings on our NBC social media platforms with the Premier League crew. Catherine, same with the NHL group. We've got Hockey at Home, Episode 1, NHL Brothers, as Catherine mentioned earlier, that's 6:30 tonight coming up. Both the great follows on Instagram for humor as well as real-life stuff mixed in. Rebecca, Catherine, miss you guys. We'll get Liam. We'll do our Zoom call sometime next week, and I'll connect and have our Zoom happy hour together with all our NBC hosts. Miss you guys, and we'll talk soon. Stay safe.
You too.
Thanks, Mike.
Take good care of yourself, please. Love to the fam.
Same, same. Catherine Tappan and Rebecca Lowe there. Still ahead, Denny Hamlin, the Daytona 500 winner. And next, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman, will join us on a call with the president over the weekend. We'll find out some of what happened there as we continue on Lunch Talk Live. So the NHL has been as active as any league, keeping us in touch with some of their big name players, and you can see some very familiar faces trying to find ways to stay fit, stay at home, stay safe, and with their families. These NHL at home videos have been fun for all of us to watch. What would really be fun to watch is the start of the NHL playoffs, which should be happening tomorrow. They're not, obviously. The NHL commissioner Gary Bettman joins us live. Commissioner, it's been one nice way to help distract some of our attention a little bit to see all these players at home, whether working out or with family. The league players have really made themselves very available to their fans via social media the last couple of months.
Our guys have been absolutely terrific under incredibly difficult circumstances, difficult for everybody, not just them, but they love the game, they love our fans, and by putting themselves out there, it's really an opportunity to have people stay connected with the game and to put a smile on people's faces. As I was watching the video that you were showing, I was smiling to myself, and I don't smile a lot, these days because, you know, this is a real difficult time that we're all dealing with.
All right. You, Adam Silver, Roger Goodell, Rob Manfred, at the front lines of it, but certainly the commissioners in college and every sport have so many issues to deal with right now. Many of the leaders in the sports world were on a conference call with President Trump on Saturday. How would you describe the content and the context of that call?
Well, first of all of us running sports are basically focused on the same things. First and foremost, people's health and well-being and safety is the most important. And while we all miss sports, either putting it on or watching it, and we all want to come back as quickly as possible, we understand what the number one priority is. The conference call was for the four majors plus a number of the other sports. President Trump gave us a briefing and brought us up to date. Obviously, he, like us, would like to see sports back at the right time, both in terms of what sports represents in bringing people together. And also, we're a bit of an economic engine. I mean, tens of thousands of people work in sports. And each of us had an opportunity to make a comment, ask a question. And it was, I think, a very cordial, constructive conversation, although the uncertainty of the times weren't clarified in that call. We're all going to have to wait until we have a lot more information, maybe in the next few weeks, before we can make any decisions.
Yeah, you went right to my next point. How did the content of the conversation, and I'm sure you can't share a lot of it, how did it in any way change your mindset of where maybe a target date could be if things go well?
I think right now there's too much uncertainty. Hopefully we'll all know more by the end of April. From an NHL standpoint, and I'm sure this is what the other leagues are doing, we're viewing all of our options. We want to be ready to go as soon as we get a green light. And the green light may not be crystal clear because there may still be some places in the country where you can't play and other places where you can. We're looking at all options. Nothing's been ruled in. Nothing's been ruled out. And it's largely going to be determined what we do by how much time there is, because we have next season to focus on as well, and the health of the country. And by the country, I mean both Canada and the U.S., obviously.
Right. I was going to get to that next, because it's a cascading set of issues differently for all of you. And for you especially, no disrespect and full acknowledgement to the NBA champion Toronto Raptors, but that's the one NBA team of the 30 in a different country. You have seven of your 31 franchises in Canada. Have you been in conversation at all with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau or anyone in the Canadian government of next level down, just in terms of where they are in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic?
We're staying in touch with appropriate governmental authorities at all levels, and there aren't a lot of answers yet. What we can do, and which we did when we took the pause, was we wanted to make sure that our people, players in particular, were healthy, that we weren't part of spreading the virus, and that our community has basically been self-isolated. We've only had seven players who tested positive, five on one team, and that wasn't surprising. It was a team that had to fly cross country, and somebody was infected on the plane. There have been a number of tests, and they have been negative. But in the final analysis, we're all, as a family, as a league, doing what we have to do to keep our people healthy and not be part of the problem. And I know it's got to be incredibly frustrating for our players, who not only love the game, but they love staying in shape. And this has been a challenging time for everyone. But when we get the opportunity to allow workouts, which may be jurisdiction by jurisdiction, when we get the opportunity to play on some basis, then we'll be prepared to execute whatever makes the most sense under the circumstances at the time.
And you make an interesting point. Roger Goodell sent out a memo with the NFL teams yesterday about equity for all 32 clubs. Let's say New York's a hot spot, right? And Governor Cuomo is going to have some issues, obviously, that other governors do not. But you have four of your franchises right in the New York area, if you add the Devils right across the river over in Newark, New Jersey. Will you need to have all 31 franchises having equal opportunity to get back to preparation before you give a green light for the season to get going?
Our clubs, if nothing, are extraordinarily competitive, and whatever we do has to be fair, which is why there's been some public speculation in the media about neutral site games in remote parts of the country. That's just part of considering all of the potential options, depending on how we find the circumstances. But when you talk about fairness, you know, we also have issues about if we get to play a playoffs, who gets in, if we can't complete the regular season. We had, I think, seven teams on the bubble, and they all think they would have had a chance. We have to deal with the lottery and order of selection in the draft. So the best thing and the easiest thing would be if at some point we could complete the regular season and then go into the playoffs as we normally do. We understand that that may not be possible, and that's why we're considering every conceivable alternative to deal with whatever the eventuality is. But again, it doesn't even pay to speculate, because nobody in any of the sports knows enough now to make those profound decisions.
Right, about a dozen games left in your regular season. In our last couple of minutes, do you have a window of how long it might take from a green light to when teams could get back on the ice? What are the hockey people telling you about that?
Well, first and foremost, we have to give an opportunity for the players to get back into game shape, and they're going to need to tune up, and that's something we're consulting and we'll be continuing to consult with the Players Association on, because as important as health and well-being is right now, and that's paramount over everything and when and how we play sports, but when we come back, we have to make sure that we don't do anything to jeopardize the players in terms of their ability to play and making sure that they're in game-ready shape. And that all goes into the equation. Yes, we need at least a couple of weeks for that. But I do believe we can play into the summer, well into the summer. And, you know, even on the NBC platforms, the fact that the Olympics have been postponed gives us a broader window to focus on when and how we can play. And so nothing has been ruled in and nothing has been ruled out.
And when you talk about the summer, in the older days and older times, we'd always talk about quality of ice. And obviously that's way, way, way down the priority list right now. But you do feel comfortable that you could play into the summer in buildings and still have the ice surface quality be good enough to hold games, you know, the teams would be comfortable playing?
You know, the days of when games had to be postponed because there was no air conditioning in a building or lawn behind us. We have modern state-of-the-art buildings. We play in places like Florida, Southern California, Arizona, Las Vegas, Dallas. We can handle making ice now in any condition because our buildings are that good and our ice-making capability is that good, as you know, because we play outdoors too, even when it's warm sometimes. So ice won't be a factor. Yeah. It'll be something we'll deal with, but it'll be the least of the issues we're focused on.
Lastly, for you, you have to be a leader and have to listen to all the constituencies around you. And leadership can be lonely. This is also a difficult time for leaders. What has this been like for you to go through these last few weeks of uncertainty and all of us asking questions about when can we get back to hockey?
Listen, we all have the same concerns. I'm extraordinarily fortunate that I have great ownership that's incredibly supportive, and the league office organization and the people that I work with day in and day out and the organizations out at all of our clubs are outstanding and are focused on what's important. But we're all passionate about the game. The Players Association has been continuously engaged in constructive dialogue. You know, we love our game. We love all the people that are involved in our game on and off the ice. Our first focus is keeping everybody healthy and safe, and we want to get back to playing for our fans and for the love of the game as soon as it makes sense and is safe to do so.
Well, I know you love traveling around to see the playoffs, and we love seeing you at the Stanley Cup Final. We're sorry that that's not going to happen as scheduled on the calendar, but we all hold out hope that we'll be doing that a little bit later on this summer. Commissioner Gary Bettman, National Hockey League, thank you. Stay safe. We'll see you down the road.
Be well, stay safe.
Thank you, Commissioner. When we come back, winner of the Daytona 500 this year, three-time Daytona 500 champion, Denny Hamlin, will join us as we continue. Lunch Talk Live rolls on here on NBCSN on a Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday, right? Yeah. Well, it's the family business very often in racing, right? So Denny Hamlin's got his daughter there. Wait, you can't turn your daughter with a little bump in the side of the car? Denny Hamlin, the three-time Daytona 500 champion, winner of this year's Daytona 500, joins us now on Lunch Talk Live. Denny, that is a rough way to teach your daughter how to drive.
Hey, teach him early. Rubbin's racing.
I love it. I love it. How are you holding up during this? Because it's not just you; it's your crew chief, it's your team, it's the whole deal. How are you guys holding up right now?
Yeah, I just got done talking to my crew chief just a few minutes ago, and it's all shut down. The race shops right now are not in business; the doors are closed. Obviously, these teams have, you know, our team in particular, Joe Gibbs Racing. We have 550 employees out there building these race cars, so you can't have them close to each other. There's a strict ban on any kind of simulation testing or anything like that. So just kind of in a holding pattern, playing some iRacing right now. That's about it.
I'm going to get to the iRacing stuff in a minute. Denny, NASCAR and IndyCar were thinking about going that weekend that all sports shut down and then finally decided not to. We're going to race without fans. What was that weekend like for you and the team as it was, well, we might go, well, we might not, no fans, and then the decision to just wave the whole deal off?
Yeah, it was very fluid. We were constantly getting updates from Steve O'Donnell, the head of competition for NASCAR. And, you know, for us, most of the guys travel on like a Thursday night or Friday to go down for practice on Friday afternoon. And the race was going to be in Atlanta, which was pretty close to most people's homes here in Charlotte. So it was, hey, don't get on the plane. Hey, wait a few more hours, and then we get to Friday morning. It's, okay, we're going to just do a race day only. We're going to do a one-day show, no fans, on Sunday, and then it gets to Saturday, and the whole thing's canceled. So I think that things were moving so quickly. I think that they were waiting on updates, and they were talking to people in the government and officials about what was the right thing, and ultimately decided to pull the plug, even though it was last minute. They made sure that they kept everyone safe and away from a racetrack.
I'm hearing a lot of sports, the conversations of sports will start without fans. It's so loud in the cars, obviously. There's so much going on when you're driving. I'm just curious, how would it impact you if you guys were racing and there were no fans in the stands?
Well, I think, generally speaking, we would be probably one of the, I think we would be one of the earliest sports back because we don't have, there's no contact within our sport. Obviously, we have our race cars that we're in, but we're not a stick and ball sport where there's actually player to player contact, or there doesn't have to be. Going back without fans, I think it's probably going to be part of the realistic future, in my opinion. I don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. I think the preliminary date right now would be late May. May 24th or 25th, when we plan on going back as of right now at Charlotte. But I think it remains fluid. I think that with every update that we get from the president or the government or information from doctors and states, it changes week by week. But right now, that looks like the plan going forward.
Let me hit a couple of things before we get going. You're flying the flag for one of your main sponsors, FedEx. And I know your FedEx car, you guys have been working about thanking the delivery workers because there are those types of deliveries still going on, an essential service to so many folks who are ordering from home and having their stuff dropped off. And FedEx is also pitching in the humanitarian effort as well.
Yeah, I think I saw an article actually yesterday or the day before about everything, all the medical supplies that FedEx has been delivering here. You know, both at home in the U.S. and abroad. So, I mean, these FedEx employees are working tirelessly to get all this, you know, important supplies to all the hospitals in need. And I can't thank them enough for continuing to support us in our racing, even though I'm doing it virtually online. But, you know, they have just been such a great supporter of our sport. And not only that, but all the humanitarian efforts that the FedEx Cares brand has put together.
This is Racing Week in America. You mentioned an iRacing win that you had. You kept Junior out of the winner's circle in one of those first iRaces. How much of a value is it for you guys right now to have those iRacing things going every weekend or during the week when you're not behind the seat, in the seat behind the wheel during one of your regular racing weeks?
Well, I actually just had a conversation with the head of, you know, president of NASCAR, Steve Phelps, and he, you know, talked to me a little bit about, you know, the million plus that watch us week in, week out now. We've run three races. You know, 250,000 of those people that watched the first week there in Homestead, as you see me doing some burnouts, had not tuned into a NASCAR race for the first four races of our season. So 250,000 new fans that were watching us that had never been exposed to racing before. That is a huge, huge gain and a win for us. He says the audience is getting younger, which is something that, you know, in NASCAR we've really been striving for here lately, is getting a younger and younger audience. So if we just, out of all those people, if we just get 10 people that have not been to a NASCAR race before, get introduced by watching us virtually and seeing all the banter and everything going on between the drivers, and you get just a few people go to a real racetrack when we open back up, it's definitely a win for our sport.
Right. So we got to make a positive out of this, and maybe this will be a positive somehow for the sport down the line. You got great leadership, part of Joe Gibbs Racing and all the things that come along with that. Daytona 500 champion Denny Hamlin, three-time Daytona winner. Thanks for joining us. Stay safe, and we look forward to seeing you back at the track soon.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Anytime, Denny. When we come back, Dr. John Torres, NBC News medical expert, answers some sports-related questions to all of the what we are talking about day in, day out, the COVID-19 pandemic. The Doc after this. This is World Health Day, and Bobby Orr, one of the greats of all time, sent this letter to the folks at Mass General who are doing the hero's work in Center Boston and everywhere else around the country, of the first line folks, nurses, technicians, custodians, everyone who is contributing in these unprecedented times. An honor from one of the greats to the greats of the current day, our healthcare providers and workers. Dr. John Torres is the medical consultant for NBC News and MSNBC. And he has been a very familiar face, and he joins us for a couple of minutes. I'm going to ask you some sports-related items here, Dr. Torres. But first, just in general, what is the greatest myth that you keep hearing repeated falsely that you would love to get to our audience so they understand what we're really dealing with right now?
You know, I think the biggest thing I'm hearing, and you're not necessarily hearing people say it, but through their actions, is there's a lot of that. It's not going to really happen to me. I think it's going to happen to other people. In certain areas where there's hot spots, they're saying, okay, there's a lot of things happening here, a lot of people getting affected, and so I need to do things I need to do, that social distancing, that stay at home. And I think they're getting the message a little better than other parts of the country where they're saying, you know, this is happening in different areas. We don't need to be as concerned. This is a nationwide issue, and everybody needs to be concerned, because even if it's not in your area yet, it's going to be in your area. And if it's there and it's not bad yet, it's going to get bad. And so you need to be very careful. Social distancing, 6 feet away from each other, wearing masks when you go out and about, and staying home unless you absolutely need to go outside. That's probably the biggest myth I'm hearing from people saying, I don't think it's going to affect me. I don't think I need to worry too much about it.
At the White House briefings, Dr. Birx, Dr. Fauci have shown us the charts, the flattening of the curve, where we are, how difficult this week was going to be. As you see all of the data and what the CDC and NIH are saying, where do you feel we are right now in terms of reaching some sort of a peak to that curve in those hotspot areas like New York, like Long Island, like California, Detroit, New Orleans, et cetera?
And we're seeing a glimmer of hope in some areas, Mike. We're seeing some places like California, Washington, where they think we've already gotten to the apex and maybe coming down the backside of that. Maybe. Time will tell. We need much more data and many more days to understand that. In New York, doesn't look like we've quite gotten to the apex yet. If we have, it looks like it might have flattened out a little bit, but we think we're making headway there as well, although today, unfortunately, the death numbers did go up. it's one of those things, again, it's going to be a day-by-day thing, watching what happens. And it's in the hot spots right now. Other parts of the country is going to be following behind that. And I thought Dr. Fauci put it perfectly. First come the cases, then come the hospitalizations, then come the ICU admissions, and then come, unfortunately, the deaths. And so we're still seeing those ICU admissions and deaths climbing up. Hopefully we get to the backside, but people need to remember, when we do get to that backside, it's not over. It's only half over at that point. And then we need to slide down that backside to get to the point where we can start getting more back to normal.
In our last 60 seconds, that leads us to my last question, sports related. Sports has to have interaction. Can we get to sports without testing to find out who's had it, who doesn't have it, and where we can be safe interacting on the sports field?
And Mike, I think testing is crucial, especially the antibody test they keep talking about that's going to show us who has it, who's had it, who's immune to it at that point, and can go ahead and play those, especially those contact sports. Sports that aren't contact sports where people individual, like we talked about, you know, car racing, people in their own cars, that type of situation, those are the people that are going to get back sooner. I think there's going to be a near normal this summer where we're going to get fans in areas where there have been no coronavirus for a while and where we can get those sports back again. I think it's going to be a year or so before we get back to normal.
Year or so. We appreciate the information. Dr. John Torres, NBC News, thank you for your context. Thank you for joining us. Al Michaels and Doc Emmerich together tomorrow, along with Justin Thomas, Kyle Petty, and Dale Jarrett. Racing Week in America starts right now on NBCSN. We'll see you for lunchtime talk tomorrow.